Test, test, test.
Okay, Reverend Sharon Buttry, I live in Hamtramck, the volunteer coordinator for the Detroit Hamtramck Coalition for Advancing Healthy Environments. And this is my husband, Dan.
Hi, beautiful face. I'm next to Dan, the power forward. I'm Coach Kellogg. I'm Coach Kellogg, the shooting guard from Detroit.
I'm Dylan Gebhardt from State Representative Abraham Ayash's office.
Deacon Monroe is here at Sweet Kingdom Missionary Baptist Church, also a part of Freedom Dreams.
All right.
And welcome.
Deacon, thank you for hosting us.
Oh, yeah.
And thank you, Coach, for arranging this. Sorry about the electricity challenges, but glad you're getting it fixed.
It'll work itself out with the Peace Conference.
Phil?
Phil Tanyan with Republic Services, a Director of Operations Support.
Hi everyone, Kim Hoyle with Lambert Marketing and Communications.
Mary Carnegie, I'm with Eagle. I'm the district supervisor for the Materials Management Division, which oversees the waste.
Hello. Sean Hurley, property owner in the neighborhood.
Great. Hi, Sean. Great.
Hi, my name's Jack Van Dyke. My wife and I are over on Moran and Farnsworth, and I'm also on the East Ferry Warren Community Association Board.
Hey,
hi, I'm Simone Najuma, and I'm a Master's of Public Health student at Wayne State. I'm doing my craft at home this semester at the Detroit Hamtramck Coalition.
Okay.
I'm Jennifer Fossbender. I'm a member of the Detroit Hamtramck Coalition for Advancing Healthy Environments, and I live near Jack down the street.
Okay. Hi, everyone. I'm Jackie from State Senator Stephanie Chang's office.
All right.
Thank you, Jackie.
Katie?
I'm Katie. I'm with Free Free Detroit. I'm also on the board of the East Ferry Warren Association. I'm taking up
this mic. This table, who wants to go first?
Adam Burville. I'm a resident in the neighborhood.
Good. Nice to meet you.
Dave Roberts, neighborhood resident.
Hello, Dave.
Hi, my name is Tricia Tarmina, and I'm a journalist, and I'm also a resident of Hamtramck.
Good. Hi, Tricia.
Hi, I'm Mike Williams, and I'm a neighborhood resident.
Hi, Mike.
I'm Thomas Pemberton. My family has been a resident in this neighborhood since the 50s. I am a facilitator for East Warren Ferry.
Thank you for being here.
My name's Tim Nutt. I'm a resident and part of East Canfield Chain Association.
Great.
I'm Scott Binder. I'm area president for Republic Services.
Big grassroots Detroiters, lifelong, generational, family resident.
Great to have you here.
Dean, 482-0711, grassroots Detroiters, third generation in the grassroots Detroiters community.
Great. You, sir?
Dale, grassroots.
Dale, great.
Vanessa and Magnolia, and we breathe the air over here every day.
Great to have you here. Mm-hmm. All right, so what we're going to do, this is the second community meeting focused on Detroit South, and our intent was to start with some community perspectives. I understand there are a few people that have some comments that they'd like to make. There was also, I believe, Reverend, a meeting on the 5th of October, and so I don't know if anybody has anything from that conversation that they'd like to share, but why don't we start there, and then we can dive into what we have in terms of updates after that. So the floor is open if someone has comments.
Excuse me.
I think Adam's going to go first.
So I moved to the neighborhood in 2008. I've been in the city since 2003, and I'm married and have two small children that were born in the neighborhood. So I can speak for myself and for my family and for some members of the community that I've spoken to and have shared, you know, these same thoughts and feelings. But I don't, you know, claim to speak for everyone or anything at all. But I will say that I was at that meeting chatting with other community members, and the two things that came out of it were a consensus around two main goals, and one is for US Ecology South to be a good neighbor in every sense of that. And that means working directly with different organizations in the community, but also dramatically improving the operations at their plant and changing a lot of things. And that was really the secondary outcome. And the primary outcome of that meeting and our conversation was that we don't feel that the facility has a place in the community. And I think for context, I'd like to talk about the incinerator because it was a facility that brought a lot of us together in this fight, and it's something that was very important to many of us for the entire time that I've been a part of the community. And towards the end of the incinerator's operations, they realized that through the multiple class action suits, through the legal actions from MD Eagle, regulatory actions from MD Eagle, constant pressure from activists, that the cost of doing business wasn't going to make sense for them. And so for me, as a resident and someone who cares deeply about this, I think that's really the message I have for you guys tonight, is that no matter what comes of this, no matter what community benefits you do, no matter what improvements you make to your operations, many of us will continue to use every single legal and regulatory remedy that we have available to us to make your existence in the neighborhood very uncomfortable. And I think that there are several very intelligent people and several deeply motivated people that all feel this way. And the combination of all of our skills and abilities, I think, is going to make your operations very complicated. Why does a company, the failures at the facility, between the fire with the VOCs at the facility that were never supposed to be there, ever, and then the broader failure of not reporting serious problems with the containment tanks of the toxic waste handling, is a signal that this business isn't compatible with what's going on in the neighborhood. The Joe Louis Greenway is going to be expanding, and it's going to be running directly adjacent to the property. To be a good neighbor, you would have to make a concerted effort to try to facilitate a project like that going directly adjacent to your facility. But the uses are completely incompatible. And MD Eagle is of the position that because it is a public park, anyone who uses it is going to be able to make reportable and actionable complaints against the facility. So no matter what we talk about tonight, I think the main thing I have to say is just that you have to find a different place that doesn't have people that are this motivated and this informed, because this is just going to go poorly.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Others?
Well, for me, my name is Thomas Pemberton. Like I said, I'm a generational, four generations in this neighborhood. And my grandmother bought her home. She had the money to purchase the home, but was not able to buy the home without an interview. That's the time we come from to where we are now. So basically, I don't want to hold anybody up. Just read, thank you for the opportunity for my voice to be heard. My family have been residents of this community since the 50s. I am concerned about the unknown and the health and safety effects it will have on my children, grandchildren, and my community. The Detroit Incinerator opened in 1986. It was also known as the Detroit Resource Recovery Facility. It was used to burn most of Detroit's trash to produce steam and generate electricity. This was built to save money, to make our environment, but that's not what happened. The results were, it made our neighborhood less attractive. Why would you pick this neighborhood? Because it's already poor?
put millions of tons of pollutants in the air of this neighborhood. Times I couldn't even come outside. My grandmother could not stay on the porch. And I know this was not intended at the beginning, and they thought they had all of these safety measures. But now, 30, 40, 50 years later, we don't know all the things that we're still having effects from. Created a lot of health process, and the whole process ended up costing them more than it was to save. So, and it was only shut down because of all the air complaints, all the diligent work, all the lawsuits. It wasn't because, and then the response was, oh, it's not that bad. But if you lived here, it's that bad. So the worry is on us. It's on us. It all sounds good. I know you're not blatantly like putting this here, trying to affect us. You're going through all the things that the minimum, the maximum, it's not good enough for us. What I would prefer is not to have the facility in my neighborhood. These are some of my concerns. Why was our community chosen? Was it because it was already a poor community, underdeveloped? Will you provide jobs and training to the people in this specific community? Will you be willing to donate directly to this community, to the people who are building these houses that have been here for years that can't afford to keep it up? Will you help them with the repairs of their home? How will the community make us aware of the violations that's in the plant? How will we know about the violations in the plant? And will we have a board with these members, with the people that are from this community, that have a voice? Will we have a real voice? And all these guarantees, will they be guaranteed 10 years from now? Basically, that's all I had to say. I mean, I love my community. I love what's going on in here. And we have to have some kind of right and power in our own community.
All right. Thank you. Anyone else? Others?
So will there be Q&A time after your presentation?
We were thinking we'd just be throughout.
Okay. All right. So Mr. Pemberton and Adam Burville were the ones who volunteered to do a presentation or talk. Is there anybody else who would like to say something now?
I guess I have kind of a general question, which I don't know if you would address it later or if you even know the answer, but there is typically a smell that comes out of the ecology center, whatever it is. It's been there forever since I've lived here for the last 15 or so years. And do you know what that smell is, and do you know what the VOCs or what the environmental concerns are of that smell? If you know what people describe it as fishy, I don't know how I describe it. It's very unbreathable, like gets into your palate, kind of a really heavy, and it's really specific to your facility. I know it from riding my bike past there, and know that it's coming from that facility. So
not heard fishy as a description.
I don't
before.
Personally think of it as fishy. I don't know how to describe it, but I know other people have used that term. But
you want to talk a little bit about sometimes what we
no,
do
no, totally.
Here?
So
this is Scott Binder. He is the area president for...
I've been involved with the facility since 2004. I was the general manager there for a long time and have taken on different responsibilities since. But the way that I would describe the odor of our process waste... We use cement-like products, okay. So I've always just sort of described it like that really musty smell in an attic or a basement. It's got that cement smell. Okay. If you've ever driven by a actually concrete production plant, it's got a very similar odor. So our fishy would have been 15 years ago.
I've definitely smelled this smell more recently in the last, not very recently, yeah, but in the last probably year I've smelled
okay.
this smell.
But fishy is typically an ammonia or amine type of bearing waste, and most of that material has been kicked out of our facility. And one of the concerted efforts that we've made over time is to get the truly malodorous stuff out of our business, so that that we don't stink up the neighborhood.
Are there known hazards to whatever is contained within that smell?
So the
it smells like it would kill you when you're really close to it. I
understand. The I guess the one thing that I would say is
you know, everything has an odor. A bakery smells like cake, yeah, right?
Sure.
So our process has its own odor. We have lots of people working at the facility that have been working there for decades. And when they're right in the treatment zone, they wear a respirator. But every other moment when they're not in the building itself, they're like we are today. So we have medical monitoring programs, and we don't have issues with our medical monitoring. That's the best I can do other than you know, again, apologize when we're having odors and promise you that we're doing our best to add equipment. We'll talk a little bit about that, but also not to take materials that have odors.
So what Scott's describing there are industrial customers that have byproducts of whatever they're manufacturing, whatever they're doing. And when the facility has determined that some of those byproducts that maybe traditionally have come to the facility clearly generate odor, they've actually said to that customer, we're no longer going to accept that particular material. And it's got to go elsewhere. So with respect to odor, I guess I would...
Hear you at this
I'm sorry. Thank you. Yeah, it's a bigger turnout this time. It's pretty great. So what I would say with respect to odor, I've shared this with others in the community as well. Our view is that there should be no off-site impacts, whether you're talking about odor or dust, et cetera. What Scott was describing is in the actual processing area of the facility, it's not uncommon to experience some odor, but the odor needs to stay on-site. Odor or dust, zero impacts, it should not be off-site. And so what we've undertaken over the last year is kind of a brought in third-party experts, fresh eyes, ears, nose, doing routine odor patrols, as we call them, going to the same locations every day, documenting, you know, what's going on to include weather conditions, building a data set to help further understand if there is odor, is it attributable to operations? And if so, what's going on at the facility at that time so that adjustments can be made so that, again, there's no off-site impact, period.
One quick follow-up on what you were saying about the medical monitoring of your workers. Uh-huh. Is that something that's publicly available and that, or do we just have to believe you at your word on that?
Well, that
people have been working there forever and have never been sick, and there's no cases of an increase of, you know, certain cancers or certain, you know, things like that?
I mean, I'm not aware that that's part of any reporting to Eagle.
Sure, but you just said that you monitor everyone and everyone's safe.
It's certainly not available, right? You've heard of HIPAA.
Yeah.
You know, you're not allowed to take and give other people's medical information out. But one of the things that I've done, and I encourage all of you to please come to the site, take a tour, visit, and you can talk to some of our folks if you want. I really want to be completely transparent and have you guys understand what we do, why we do it, why we might have odors on certain days, you know, and show you what we do. A lot of times when people come in and actually see the facility and see what we do, very surprising how ordinary it is. You know,
I think you have
that's awesome. Yeah. But you know, people picture in our facilities, they picture Gotham City and all kinds of green stuff, and it's pretty ordinary.
Sure.
But anyway, I invite you guys to come.
If I could, just before we jump to a different topic, when you're detecting odor, do you communicate what you detect to Eagle or to other? I think Eagle has like an actual capability to receive, you know, community concerns about odor. And if you don't want to respond, that's fine too. But I'm just curious if you have, and if you have a perspective on whether that's working or not. Because one of the things we previously talked with the Reverend and KT, this was in the first meeting when odor came up, was, is there a different way to engage with the community when there's, you know, a perception of odor? And we certainly have had different experiences at Republic engaging the community when, you know, there's been concerns about odor. So there's different ways to go about it. I'm just curious if the current functionality is something that is satisfactory and being used, or is it worth having a conversation exploring about a different approach?
Yeah,
course. I mean, it's totally unsatisfactory. I mean, there's odor complaints all the time. And then not just Eagle doesn't give violations, but also the people that work at the facility said that in their subjective mind, there is no odor, and it shouldn't even be considered a violation. And that happens more than 50% of the time. But back to the HIPAA thing and the workers' safety, you know, you don't need to release the workers' names in order for you to give us an understanding of, you know, whether your workers are safe or not. I mean, let's not Absolutely. Brush that under the rug. Right. I mean, if you're saying yes. you're doing monitoring, then there should be a way for you to actually prove that, you know...
Make a report.
That your workers are safe and have been safe for the last 10, 15, 20 years.
Or document, you know, the instances where something does come up. I mean, you don't have to use somebody's...
Yeah, we don't want their names.
You just simply put it in as a study. You don't call nobody. You
exactly.
put it in a whole package deal.
That's
and
how
this
it works.
Is what the last 10 years show.
I guess just anecdotally, too. Like, so the idea that there's no odors, like, if we just did, like, a straw poll, like, since the toxic waste handling unit has been shut down, have the odors improved?
There's been less odor.
There's been less odor.
Absolutely.
100%.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. So, like, I think it's not so much a question of, like, I work in a hospital. I'm a union electrician. We use HEPA carts in the hospital. And it's because we're working in a hospital. We don't want anything from the ceiling to get on the floors. There's patients. Meanwhile, it's a system that satisfies a regulation. And every time I step up and down my ladder, I'm tracking asbestos and whatever, God knows what else, on the floor. But I'm satisfying every regulation because I'm working out of a HEPA cart and I have the air system set up correctly. And I think, like, yeah. We can argue, like, split hairs about, like, does it smell? Does it not smell? Do we have proper systems to mitigate smells? I'm sure you can find an engineering company that tells you that it's working fine. But the ultimate end user is the community. And it affects the enjoyment of their property, their functioning, their health. And these are, like, deep issues. And so it's hard to engage seriously about a debate between, like, oh, yeah, well, the expert says it doesn't smell. But I know it does. And I know it smelled worse when the toxic handling was still going on than it does now.
Yeah, I have to say, I was the person that did all the canvassing work to, you know, flyer the community for this meeting and last week's meeting and actually some of the previous meetings, and one common narrative with every single community member that I saw was, isn't the summer awesome? It doesn't smell. Like, that was what I just heard time and time and time again. And I think it was maybe because I think somebody used the word ordinary about US ecology. I think everybody thought that when the incinerator shut down, the smells would go away, and they didn't. They're just different.
Right. I think, like, I used to call a lot on the incinerator, but sometimes the smell was coming from your facility. And so I learned a little bit better how to distinguish the smells that came from the incinerator versus the smells that came from your facility. And I also, like, I live in the neighborhood, and that Ferry Street Bridge is, like, my best way to get into Midtown. But a lot of times, you know, before I leave my house, I'll check and see which way the wind is blowing before I ride my bike over there. Because if the wind is blowing where I'm going to get a whiff of your facility, I don't, you know, I go out of my way to avoid it. And, like, I think that's not just an inconvenience. You know, it makes me worry about the health implications for everybody who has to, like, be downwind.
So where I was trying to go before about the question about just communicating with Eagle when that's sort of the process that exists today. And so one of the things that we talked about in the first Detroit South community meeting back in August was the notion of trying to drive to action wherever we can. And so we may not be able to push, you know, this particular topic much further tonight, or maybe we can. It depends. But certainly open to exploring different processes for how people could communicate with us if they detect odor. That doesn't, I'm not suggesting bypassing the process that Eagle has by any stretch. Perhaps just a way collectively we can come up with something so that we're receiving whatever the community is experiencing in closer to real time. Because at present, we do not necessarily get your feedback until some period of time later, and that's again not a knock on Eagle, it's just process the way it works today.
We have a publicly available phone number to call.
So we've done phone numbers, we've done emails, we've done websites. There are different approaches. I don't want to be the one to tell you this is what we're going to do. I'd love for it to be a collective design. Yeah.
Do you smell odors? Report them, and there was your facility, and then that would be, you know, if it was obvious point of interaction right there where, okay, I won't call Eagle, I'll call you guys because you are the first ones that can change the smell.
Again, I want to be careful. I'm not by any stretch saying don't call Eagle. That's not my message at all. I'm just saying collectively perhaps there's a way we can figure out something together with Eagle where we can be the recipient of some of that information and closer to real time. Because if we start to, I see a KT, one sec. Because if we can start to get that information, then what Scott and his team can do is assess what's going on right now, not just what's the weather and what's the wind, but operationally what is occurring, and then we can work backward from there to determine if there's any attribution to operations. So a phone number is a great idea. I'm open to other thoughts. KT, sorry.
Okay, sorry, I can't get my hand raised when I'm taking.
Yeah, fair enough.
Thanks for taking that. So we had that when, I just forgot his name. There was another manager at U.S. Ecology. You guys helped me out. What was
John
his name?
Martin. John.
No, tall, thin guy.
Raymond.
Raymond.
Yeah, Raymond.
Raymond was great. Like, we had his personal cell phone number, and he would get calls sometimes at, like, 2 in the morning. He lived in Detroit. When he got calls from our community members, even at the odd hours of the night, he would drive to the facility to figure out what was going on. And so I would hope that maybe you can look back into the records of when Raymond was managing the operations, because like it would prove there that he was responding directly to our calls. Sometimes he could do something about it. Sometimes he couldn't, because it was just one guy going in and being like, this is messed up, and trying his best to do what he could as an individual. Mm-hmm. But most of the time, the odors didn't stop right away, and we still had those issues. So, I mean, I appreciate you trying to form a better relationship with the community and have some sort of call line for odors, but I think it's more important for us to have a more clear understanding of Eagle and having them come out, like, as fast as Raymond could come out, because a lot of times they don't even show up for an hour or two. No offense to you guys, but you guys live far away, and then when you're out here, the odors are gone. The wind has shifted. I even have a recorded experience of being right next door where we were going to originally meet, where the odors were here, and then when somebody showed up, they just were like, it's not here anymore. And that violation, even though about 10 to 15 people all experienced it, didn't become a violation because it was no longer present for the regulatory agency. And that's a bigger problem, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think that we definitely need an 800 number or a number of somebody that's not going to change. Mm-hmm. Like, we really relied on Raymond to respond. And then when he left, we were, again, starting from scratch. And so if we had a number where we can identify odor issues, but not just that, but also you guys can reach out to the community leaders and say there was an emergency situation, because finding out about the fires that are going on or any other emergency situation that you guys had, by just hearing it on, you know, some other social media, mm-hmm. isn't okay, because a lot of the community members that we work with live less than a block away from you and have serious lung and heart problems, and we would want to make sure that they are made aware of this as soon as possible. And sometimes we have to, like, go to their house because, you know, they're not on the internet. And so, and you guys aren't going there to say, maybe you should head out for a second or close your windows and doors or whatever it may be.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think that should be established.
Great, great perspective, yeah. So phone, email, website, you know, your comment about just being able to communicate with community
reminded me that I don't think we did a sign-in sheet tonight. Did we?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, I haven't seen it, so I'll need to make sure that I go sign up myself. Perhaps we could use that as a basis. I mean, we've got the distribution list that we used for the invitation for this meeting. We've got a largely similar distribution list for the meeting we just held at Detroit North. So I think we could start with those and then add from that this community list as a starting point. But until we get something structured, how about we just say this for any additions to that type of communication list, just email me directly. I know Jennifer, KT, the Reverend, I'll have my email. I've got cards. I can give them to other folks at some point in the conversation as well. But so I'm hearing phone. Does anybody have a perspective about email as another tool or a website or a different thought altogether on one, updates, and then two, communication? Yeah.
Different thought altogether. I'm kind of more of a proactive type person. So we're going to have meetings. We've been having meetings like this, I see, and we're probably going to have a whole lot more. It's not going to be a problem that's going to be resolved quickly.
Yeah.
So what I mean by being proactive, I think it would be a nice gesture for U.S. Ecology to some homes around there to give, especially if they're older people who got kids in the house, some type of filter system in their house so they can filter some of the smells. Because what we're talking about here, whether you can regulate the smells or not, the smells are getting out. And once they're out, they're just out. So the community have to deal with that. So to be a little more proactive and show good faith in that you're working with our community, people that's around, especially in those direct areas, it'd be nice to have some type of air filtration system that they can put into their homes to combat that until we can resolve this.
Magnolia's mom.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, I second that. Thank you for that idea.
Yes.
And also second what Adam said as the first priority. It's not compatible. But in the meantime, I think that we need more communication from you all rather than putting the work on us. Like, shouldn't be my job to call every week or multiple times a week for the last 10 years in the middle of the night, be on hold, go through the whole thing, what's their address, and how many times I've had to say your address, how many times I've had to say the same thing over and over again. Sometimes I'm on the phone for like 10 minutes.
It shouldn't be that way. Okay.
Yeah. So, but the odors are a bother, and nuisances are part of living anywhere. But I'm concerned about, like, what are the studies that prove that what you're processing is safe to breathe? It's and like it's annoying to smell it, but the smell is a reminder that like we're being poisoned every day. And I think that the fear and living with that and, oh man, why am I here? Should I move somewhere else? You know, those thoughts I think are really that's the problem. Mm-hmm. The problem is living in fear. And would you want your children, grandchildren to be sleeping next door to the facility? And if you can, in full conscience, answer yes, then like keep operating in a
and
residential
please move.
City.
Darn, move next door.
Come on,
yeah,
come on
yeah,
over,
yeah.
Come on over.
Buy a house in the neighborhood and live next door.
Lots of homes to fix.
There's some great, very charming ones too. I've noticed when I've gone through the neighborhood.
Yeah, but if you know, you go through your research and your operations, and the answer is no, I wouldn't sleep next door.
You know, one of the things that I've observed about operations of this nature is oftentimes you've got really smart technical people, be it chemists or engineers or whatever, scientists who communicate in very scientific language. And sometimes it's as simple as translating that to something that is a little bit more plain English so that it theoretically can build a basis of understanding that eventually one day helps to mitigate some of the fear. Literally everything that occurs at that facility is under the watch and knowledge of Eagle. There's also other regulators like the GLWA. So there's a ton of additional scrutiny and oversight. But I almost wonder if there's not a little bit of just people communicating past one another or even not even communicating clearly from the beginning. But your point is well noted, and thank you for it. Anyone else? Yeah.
I said one thing I just wanted to mention that kind of speaks to, I think, several people's points. And the fact that the facility is shut down right now, this is obviously no time better than now to do like baselines for like water quality outside of the facility or air quality, because there's no activity now. And, you know, we know that this facility, you know, has been owned from a variety of, you know, people over the years, and has been operating as a waste facility for a long time. So I feel like this, I mean, there's no ability to give like the old time Detroiters, like, you know, a baseline to their health, right? Especially with, you know, the incinerator. But I feel like because there is a lot of industry in the area, this would give US Ecology or Republic Services an opportunity to say, it's not us if there's all kinds of stuff going on, and then it's not much worse when you reopen. I mean, baselines are valuable information. Speaking of science, you know, speaking of just like knowing what is going on, because this community has never been afforded that opportunity.
Yeah, for sure. And it's a great comment, and it actually ties very nicely to the perspective on communication. I think there is some testing. Part of this is going to be what we talk about in a minute that is consistently occurring. The groundwater testing, we do have a couple of updates for you that we'll talk about here in a minute. But the groundwater testing has been going as actively as it ever has at this facility since the pause in operations. And the air monitoring continues as well. That's on a different cadence than the air monitoring that we talked about at Detroit North, and I can dive into that. But there's data, is the point, that's being churned out right now on a consistent basis since the pause in operations. And so oftentimes, as I think you may have heard me say before, sometimes like on the air monitoring data, the immediate output from the device is like looks like a code. It's like zeros and ones and sevens, and sometimes there's some letters in there, and you know, it takes somebody in a lab to actually analyze it and translate it, and then it takes somebody else to take that and put it into English. But there's data, and so I think it's a great idea. We ought to take a look at how we can just access that data and then figure out the right way to, you know, make it accessible to the community, and that can be, I think, to your point, a good baseline for the future.
Yeah, and I feel like if, you know, like we were talking about, like if GLEWA and, you know, obviously Eagle and DWSD were also involved, like you said, they don't necessarily communicate well with each other, but, you know, it's the groundwater, but then it's also, you know, all the sewer water that runs alongside, right, like down water from it. So just...
Yeah, for sure. And the sewer water question, sewer system question, came up in the August 1st, the first Detroit South meeting that we had in August, and it is part of the stuff we were hoping to talk about tonight.
Yeah. Just real quick about sewers. Detroit does have a combined sewer system, which makes it a big problem, which I'm sure you're well aware of.
I'm learning quickly.
Okay. Well, that's really the biggest problem, that if ever there is overflow, all the stuff that you're putting in the sewer actually goes directly into the Detroit River. But anyways, I just had another question more about, you know, the science and everything. We did have Eagle come here and talk to us a few weeks ago.
Bless you.
And they were very, they tried to simplify it a little bit to explain to us what sort of these violations were. And I think everyone's takeaway was that this facility is extremely toxic and deals with extremely toxic materials, and there have been some serious violations that are not to be taken lightly. Mm-hmm. And one of the big takeaways, too, was that a facility like this would not be allowed to operate at this point if it were to, you know, to new permits or anything like that. So here we're dealing with this facility that is slowly decaying over time and being patched up as it goes along, as it hobbles along until the next... potential problem, fire, contamination problem. So the real question is, you know, how long is it just going to be continuously patched up with continuous failures as we move along, you know, being neighbors?
Not our plan, no. So we'll talk a little bit more about some of the improvements that are already underway and others that working with Eagle are part of the plan.
Yeah, we'll talk a little bit more about that.
And then I guess one other thing completely unrelated. I do feel a little bad for you guys because Republic, I didn't know much about Republic, but all I've known for years is that you guys are a great, you know, collecting company that mm-hmm. operates nationally.
Thank you.
And I feel like, you know, you read the news, there was an article about the landfills that that you operate down, the toxic landfills down there.
The one in Van Buren.
Yeah, and then even here, the fact that, like, Eagle wasn't, you know, there were so many, not just mismanagement, but oversight, and the numbers are all wrong. The landfills, some people say it's 900,000 mm-hmm. tons, some people say it's 400. Here you're saying that, you know, you're taking these materials, you're not taking VOCs, there's a fire. Mm-hmm. So what I'm wondering is, were you aware of all that when you bought U.S. Ecology? Do you have any buyer's remorse? Do you realize that you... No, seriously, do you realize that what you bought... I mean, they had explosions that killed people in Nevada.
Yeah,
I mean, U.S. Ecology was so badly managed for so long, and now you're bearing the brunt of that mismanagement.
Well, first, thank you for the kind words about Republic. Before I react or respond to that, let me just... Sorry, that's the downside of being in a long rectangle, I suppose, right? So what I was going to say was just for clarification, certainly not for debate, at both North and South, the operations are not just hazardous. There's as much non-hazardous operation processing that's occurring at those facilities as there is hazardous. So again, just a point of clarification. But no, thank you. So thank you. Republic Services, first and foremost, is a sustainability company. I suspect those of you who know about us probably know of us from our blue trucks and our blue containers that you know, serve a wide majority of Metro Detroit. We're a sustainability company, though, because we're the first in our industry to adopt climate goals that align with the UN's goals. We have, I want to say, 40 plus, around 43, new renewable natural gas facilities at the solid waste landfills that we have. And so what that means is when waste decomposes, it generates methane. You capture that methane. I think traditionally, in a lot of places, it's flared, which is, you know, one use over time. But as, you know, science technology has evolved, there was sort of a 1.0 version was capturing some of that and being able to generate some levels of, you know, power. But, you know, some of these renewable natural gas, you know, facilities that we're bringing online can generate, you know, super high-end quality, you know, fuel that you know, we use in a lot of cases to power our trucks. I mentioned trucks because we operate a fleet of over 17,000 collection vehicles across the country, and we're on a journey to electrify them. We've already got few dozen that we're piloting now and leaning in a very aggressive way to bring electric trucks to Detroit in the not so distant future. There's a ton of R&D, keep in mind, that's got to be done there before you'll see them widely deployed, but we're on that journey and we're very proud about it. The reason we're doing a lot of this and the reason we acquired U.S. Ecology is because we are hyper focused about our customers and what our customers tell us, what it is that they want, what their needs are. And if you think about, you know, all the industry that exists in Metro Detroit, those manufacturers, obviously, in their facilities have traditional solid waste needs. They've got traditional recycling needs. We are always out there talking to them about our operations, about their satisfaction relative to our service. And over time, we were getting a lot of feedback, really, from industrial customers, that they've got a whole separate waste stream that they need, you know, to have served, and they felt like there were different bits and, you know, pockets and places where they could go to find different people that could help, but there was nothing that was comprehensive. And so we would actually receive feedback from our customers saying, how great would it be if you all had, you know, non-hazardous and hazardous, you know, capabilities, so that because we think so highly of you, that we've got one reliable partner that can help us service, you know, all of their needs. And so that is how the acquisition of U.S. Ecology kind of got its start, if you will, as an idea within our organization. Going back to circularity, I did mention, you know, recycling. One other comment I'd just like to share, as you think about Republic, you know, we all hear a ton about plastics these days and plastics crisis and plastics in oceans and, you know, what are we going to do? And you know, we're using plastics as we sit here tonight. We're also about to introduce the first polymer center that that we'll have. It's the first of many to come. It's going to be in Las Vegas. The way to think about a polymer center is sort of second processing steps. So materials go to a recycling facility today. You know, they're separated, they're processed, and then, you know, there's some in market for those materials. But to really get true, pure flake that could be put back into a future water bottle or, you know, a Coke bottle or a Pepsi bottle or whatever to get closer to true circularity, you know, it requires additional processing. So we're introducing polymer centers. The first one's coming in Vegas, as I say, in a few months. And that is also in response to a lot of our customers, but it's helping to bring circularity to, you know, the broader plastics problem that we all have. So a lot of these things are not specific to your concerns and comments about Detroit South. I get that. But it is important that as you think about Republic Services and as you get to know us, or at least hopefully give us the opportunity to get to know us, that you recognize that we are, at our core, a sustainability company. Yes, sir.
Yeah, I have two questions. The first is a point of clarification on the earlier answer about collecting data. Is that your company, Republic Services, is currently collecting your own data around groundwater and that sort of thing?
There's a lot of groundwater sampling that Detroit South that's occurring now. We do that in full collaboration with Eagle. In some cases, there's like split samples, and then, you know, all data goes to Eagle. Our data goes to like an independent lab, but everything ends up at Eagle, and then everybody evaluates and determines, you know, it's analysis at that point, determines what they consider with the data.
And that's all public?
What Jennifer was alluding to is it'd probably be helpful to have a better perspective on some of that data. It's theoretically public in the sense of it's at Eagle. But it's not public in the sense of that there, as we speak today, there's not a Detroit South website. One of the things I think that may make sense is that there should be one, and that might be a place where that type of information could one day live.
Is that like a commitment you'd be willing to make?
Well, I absolutely, but I don't want it to be Russ saying, "Hey, community, we're going to do a website." I'd rather you guys say, "We think that's a good idea, and we've got some perspectives on what should be on that website, and let's do it collaboratively." It shouldn't be a unilateral thing. But sure, if the community thinks that a website would be advantageous to put, you know, as much information as we reasonably can out there about operations, then we're fully committed to doing that.
Just going back to kind of the reporting thing, I would say, though everyone's tired of apps, the Improved Detroit app is a pretty successful way of reporting and people being able to see what's been reported and follow up on, you know, kind of whether it's been responded to and things like that. I would just use that as a suggestion.
Thank you. I'm unfamiliar with that, so I'll check it out.
I would say, as far as me and the community, it's the transparency. Mm-hmm. You know, we've been scarred.
Sure.
And so it's about the transparency. I know you can't make this, oh, it's not going to be any older or anything, but it's the transparency, us being able to validate what you say, validate what we feel, to realize the facts.
And I feel it when you speak, and I feel it when all of you, you know, have shared your comments. One of the things that it's Adam, right? That Adam shared, you know, he talked about incompatibility from his view, and I hear that, but he also made a point about simply just being a good neighbor and, you know, being more, I don't think he used the word embedded, but embedded or involved with the community. And that's not lost on me. It has not been lost on me in these last, 6 months since I've gotten to know some of the people in this room. And it's something that should be better and absolutely will be better. But I don't want, just kind of like the comment I shared about the website, I don't want that to just be Russ volunteering what Russ thinks we should do. I would respectfully request of anybody who's willing to do this to give us
a little bit of grace and a little bit of perspective on what you think engagement might look like.
Please don't bring a plastics recycling facility here. We don't want it. Is it a chemical facility?
No, it's a secondary facility? Processing. So
what does that mean?
So it takes, it is, I'm by no means the expert on this, but you get, so if you're a traditional recycling facility, the output is going to be like a bale of plastics or fiber.
Something that you would consider? Is that something?
I don't know that I would ever expect my employer to purchase my home.
No,
but I
it's been done. It's been done.
That's not something that I would ever expect of my employer. But you know, listen, I live in Phoenix. I make no bones about that. But I have spent some time just trying to walk around the community, drive around the community, and I think there's some.
I mean, that would show a commitment to the neighborhood. Like, our people live here.
Fair enough. I believe there are some number of employees who work at the facility who live in the vicinity. I don't know the exact number, but I can get that.
Can I say something before we go off into them buying property in our neighborhoods? before we even address that, like she said, we don't want it here. My grandmother's 89, been over here since the 40s.
Yeah.
So, and she has asthma and COPD, which a lot of people that stayed over here contracted that from the waste management places that was over here. So I hear what you're saying, but no, that's not the route we're going with this.
Okay. Sorry, guys. Adam's been patient for a minute. Can I get him and then come to you?
Let me go first. Adam is long.
No, I just wanted to... You're a smart guy. You've made it far. You're doing a big job at Republic, and you know that different communities in different states in different areas of the country have different attitudes, rules, regulations, laws. Michigan historically has been a state that has catered to industry in many ways, and it has a lot to do with our industrial past. And I would emphasize past in saying that. The UAW, I mean, who's on strike right now and fighting for what they feel like is a fair package, is a fraction of what they once were. And more broadly, the industries of this region, the knock-on effects socially that they brought to this region in the 1930s, 40s, 50s, and 60s are long gone, or they're not in this community. So just for you to know what's going on, Michigan flipped completely Democrat in every single level of state government. Dana Nessel is committed to moving in a more environmental direction, and both houses in Michigan are committed, and it seems like moving in a more environmental direction. At the same time as that's happening, the citizens of the state are receiving less and less benefits from this industrial largesse that historically has, you know, provided middle class and upper middle class lifestyles to many people. Those things are gone. And so what we're left with is the plants that are full of robots and the waste from the processes. And I guess my point to you is, like, we're going to talk about a bunch of stuff, and I'm not doing this to be mean or be rude at all.
No.
And it's not personal. It's just that things are changing in Michigan, it would seem. And I would think that as a company that's operating a very large business with a lot of different financial concerns going on, that you guys would have to be aware of things like that and recognize that the regulatory picture can change, things can change, and you're not going to find a ton of people that are like singing the praises of a system that have destroyed our environment and left most of us without good paying steady jobs.
Sure. No, thank you for that. I fully respect the perspective and do pay very close attention to what's happening, not just in Detroit, but in Lansing and throughout the state. And look, we want to be at the table, and we want to be part of the conversation wherever we can about change, whatever that change looks like. Perhaps there's a role for us in some of those conversations, perhaps there's not. The best we can do is show up as who we are with open minds and full intent and try to find some commonality. Hopefully we can. But at the minimum, you know, we're committed to more engagement like this, more discussion like this, and trying to find opportunities to take action where we can. Thank you for being patient.
No, more of my concerns are that what I think about is long-term effects for kids, for pregnant women. Mm-hmm. And when I say the concerns is, how do we, I'm pretty sure, think of some ways that we can keep that data, where we can monitor that data and cross-reference that data against other data to really see if this stuff is really in our community and kind of get a better sight on it. Now, that's something that had to be worked with the community as well as y'all, but that's a way we can start playing where we can be working towards a common goal while we're trying to see how this is going to work out and play out. So those are some of my concerns, because at this point, once we have the effects of the conditions, we are already there. Mm-hmm. Now we need to talk about how do we stop these from happening, and what do we do, what do you guys take role of far as our health bill, our doctor bills, is y'all going to give us some of y'all good medical or something to that aspect. But those are some other issues that we are very concerned about and thinking about
this. Yeah, no, thank you for that comment. So I will volunteer this. You may or may not agree with me, but I thus far am unaware of any known health impacts related to operations in this community. What I will tell you is what I think I'm hearing you say is transparency is a start, and I think I would tell you that I agree with that. Exactly how to provide more transparency, more information, is initially a burden that, let's just say, is on me. That's another takeaway that the Reverend and KT are going to keep me honest on, and you too if you have my info. But I will figure out a way, because there is data. I will figure out, now again, the outputs of some of this data, as I shared, sometimes when you look at it, it looks like code. It's not in English, right? So it has to be translated by laboratory people, you know, to say this is what it means. And then usually it's scientific English versus, you know, day-to-day English. So there's probably a secondary translation that needs to occur. But I commit to you to being more transparent. I commit to you to being way better communicators, not just, you know, being way better neighbors in terms of engagement. And that's the start, to try to get closer to what you're seeking.
Some of the things we don't want to happen. We don't want to be having the community, the facility here, we become nose blind, like some of your workers sure. Probably are. They don't smell it because they're there all day.
That is a thing, and you know, I hope that's not the situation here. It is certainly in our industry. Sometimes there are bad actors. I believe in my heart of hearts we are not, but there sometimes are bad actors, and that's why in our country we have regulators such as EGLE and the EPA, et cetera. So, yes, the nose blind or loss of sense of smell of certain things in industry has happened in, you know, at facilities that, you know, sometimes are bad actors. My heart of hearts, I hope that's not the case here, but I hear you. Yes, ma'am.
I also would like to know the effect of what it would do to our plants. I'm a grower. I've been growing for years. I grow food. So, again, when you're putting things like that in the air, mm-hmm. if I'm trying to grow food that I'm putting into my family and my community's body, what will be the effect of, you know, a data for that?
Sure. So, fair comment. I have seen studies, just general industry studies, on impacts of operations relative to human health and the environment. I don't know that I've seen anything specific to vegetation. Yeah. But I can look for it, and if you happen to stumble across something, that would be please share it. That'd be a starting point. Thanks. Yep.
I wanted to be able to share what we did at our last meeting last week so that you would hear the community priorities that came out of a process that we had, and then if there's more time for questions and answers, great.
Okay.
But for those who came in late, and I don't want to stand in front of anybody. For those who came in late, I'm Reverend Sharon Buttrey. I'm the volunteer facilitator for Detroit Hamtramck Coalition for Advancing Healthy Environments, and that is a coalition that includes many people in this room. People who are in block clubs, different organizations that care about environment and environmental justice. Personally, I've lived in the area for 26 years, and I live about 3 miles that way. For our coalition, our mission is all about clean air, clean water, clean land for us as residents. And it's not just a quality of life issue, it's a matter of life and breath. It's a matter of life and death. Okay, so for example, Michigan is in the top 5 states in the nation for diseases linked to air quality. That's our context that we're in. So when we say we smell odors and we think they may be harming us, that's our context. We're already in a place where our health is very compromised because of air quality. Adults in Detroit are hospitalized more than almost 4 times as often as adults in other parts of Michigan. So our context is not just Michigan being a place where our health is compromised, Detroit is particularly compromised. And according to the University of Michigan, outdoor air pollution in Detroit causes 721 premature deaths, 500,000 missed work days, and 1 million missed school days a year. That's what we're talking about when we're talking about our lives. So that's what we feel, and that's what we know is happening. That's data that you can find anywhere. And so when you add offensive odors and dust in this community on top of all that, that's what we're talking about. That's our life in this community. So far, odor violations issued by the state of Michigan have not brought a real solution to us. You can say our regulatory agencies have the responsibility to do these things, but as we have learned, the laws are not always applied evenly and equitably in communities, and so we have to look at that. We have to look at the equity lens and how it applies here. And we learned at an MD Eagle meeting that violations are very arbitrarily given based on the company is working on it. Well, that doesn't help us. That doesn't help us that they're working on it. It still smells and it still affects quality of life. So our coalition has been very successful in some ways working with the company prior to ownership by Republic Services. We did get a host community agreement with the city of Detroit for U.S. Ecology North. We cut out the fracking waste. We changed trucking routes. And we also got regular community meetings. So we decided as a coalition we wanted to meet to hear from MD Eagle. We got a lot of great information about the violations, what the future operations of this facility would look like, should it be allowed to reopen this portion of activity. And also, we got a lot of information about how we can move forward in affecting policy. Yes, ma'am.
I have a question.
When you say 3 miles that way, and I mean this in no disrespect, how far are we talking? Because that wouldn't be this particular community.
Right.
So that's what I'm just wondering.
Yeah, I live on the
the northwest corner of Hamtramck. Our coalition...
Okay, that's not this particular.
Right. No, okay. Our coalition covers 48212, 48211, and 213. Okay. I know we're sitting in 207,
yes.
But that's part of the solidarity that we have decided to adopt as an organization.
We do have organizations already established within our community. So how can you adopt our area?
So we're talking about a coalition. We're not talking
about
an organization. But I was just wondering.
We could debrief on that later.
Okay. So the meeting that we had here last week, we had a voting process. And so I wanted to just report what the priorities were. The overarching priority was shut it down. People don't want the facility here. That's what Adam and others have voiced tonight. We want the facility shut down, but while you intend to do business on the doorsteps here, there are things we must have, and this is in order of votes cast. 26% of the vote was about odors. Establish transparent methods and operations that mitigate all dust and odors released into our community. 20% of the vote went to chemicals, restricting chemicals of concern from being processed and or stored at this urban facility. 13% of the vote went to transparency. Be transparent and communicative with the community and emergency responders about incoming and outgoing materials, monitoring data, violations, and emergency protocols. 7% went to community meetings. Hold regular meetings separate from U.S. Ecology Detroit North HCA meetings. 7% of the vote went toward trucks. Establish truck washing apparatus inside facility buildings where trucks load and unload and require all trucks to be washed before leaving this facility to reduce dust and trucks and have traffic routing improvements. 7% went toward roads. All you have to do is drive up and down St. Aubin, and we know that the roads need improvement. 7% went to sewers and infrastructure issues. We suspect that a lot of the odors may actually be trapped in our sanitary sewer system and are creating certain conditions, perhaps anaerobic conditions, that are creating odors that are not particularly from the facility, but as a result of wastewater flowing from the facility. 7% of the vote went to air monitoring. At this south facility, possibly on a 24-hour basis, and we need to talk details. A lot of the monitors are on particulate matter, but not on chemicals or other VOCs or hydrogen sulfide or other things that might be affecting our health. The final 7% went to buffers, to take action to buffer the community, members from harm from the facility. So as a prelude to each of those votes, the statement was, we don't want it here. We want it to stay shut down. But if this is how you're going to do business here, these are the things we must have. So that was the result of the meeting last week. I think a lot of those things have been echoed. These are the things we need. We need a legally binding agreement with you, not maybe it will happen, or we're going to look into it, or give us some grace. We need legally binding agreements with you, either from the company itself or through permit stipulations that come through MD Eagle. And we've been, this community, folks who have lived here a long time have been working on this for years and years, and it's time to see a change. A legally binding agreement and policies will give us the accountability from Republic Services that we deserve. We thank you for meeting with us tonight, and that's what we came up with at a community meeting last week. It's been reiterated here tonight, and that's our statement.
No, that's terrific. Thank you very much. On the community benefit agreement, we talked about this a little bit at the first Detroit South meeting in August. And at the time, I said what I'm going to say now, which is we're perfectly open to a community benefit agreement. My immediate question, I don't know, KT, if you recall this, was typically in agreements there's at least more than one party that's involved, so with whom would the agreement be? And I, as I recall in that conversation in August,
Our frame of reference is what's referred to as a host community agreement that Detroit North has with the city of Detroit. So back in August, I had asked the question, does this community envision whatever we call the agreement, I'm using the term community benefit agreement, a community benefit agreement with the city of Detroit? And what I heard back in August was mostly no, that it should be with a community organization. So that's when my question was, okay, well, what community organization might that be? Which one is it? And it's okay if those answers aren't, ready today. But I think my position, just to restate our position, is that when the community feels like there's consensus about who the agreement Detroit South would be with, we're ready and willing to have the conversation. Please just let us know. Yeah.
Thanks, Russ. So we kind of can't get that through the city of Detroit because South isn't reapplying for specific reasons that would allow that procedure to happen. So it's not like it's not a subjective or an arbitrary decision for them to make. It's like a sort of a process, right, for the city to come into that agreement. So I guess my question is, since you guys are reapplying like for an expansion or something like that, is that even a possibility to negotiate that with the city, a host community agreement, a legally binding host community agreement?
You can't go through the city of Detroit because it's not a new facility, for one, and it's not an expansion of over, some millions of dollars. But my suggestion, and I'm throwing this in the pot, if it's a community benefit agreement, I'm saying get at least one member from the associations that is in this area. Because if you don't do it fair, it ain't gonna be fair.
Yeah.
I'm just being honest. That's how I feel about it.
I don't know who was first, KT or y'all? Okay.
Go ahead, KT.
There are multiple neighborhood associations that are interested in a community benefit agreement, especially one that would consider monetary value on top of the other things that were listed from the coalition. Uh-huh. And like Coach said, it would be important to have everybody at the table. We also are working with the Sugar Law Center, or at least have access, Tanya is here, who has helped create community benefit agreements throughout the city to create a democratic process so that something can be made fair for everyone.
Thank you.
Grassroots stand is this. Grassroots stand. And I want to talk personally for me and some of our members, not the whole community of the grassroots. But our stance is, at this standpoint, is we're still trying to learn. Y'all coming in, y'all new. We're still trying to learn y'all plans, y'all goals. What are y'all offering? What we're trying to do is we want to hear what y'all have to offer, what we have to tell you, what we're looking for and what we don't want.
Okay.
What we're looking for, a chance to become good neighbors. What we are looking for, a chance for y'all, we're not looking, I don't know about no one else, but we're not looking for no one-time payout, and like everything is going to be good and, maybe I'll use another word, good and great, peaches and cream. What we are looking for is a continuum, as long as y'all are there, we are here, because we're going to be here. We're looking for a marriage forever. We're looking for y'all us to constantly grow together. When you do good, we do good. We have an issue here in our community that I don't think a lot of folks are looking at. We have a lot of big businesses coming over here. We got Waste Management. We have Eastern Market. We have you guys, et cetera, et cetera. This is bringing our property value down. But what we can use this to create for us is a different avenue where we can get everybody to play together. We can turn our community into a wealthy community where it don't come down, that we have great relationships with our business, our city officials, as well as our clergymen, our priests and pastors. This is how you make this really grow and how everything works. they can take care and sustain our community from them, and which make our community some desirable where everybody would want to come. But what we need to do is sit down as a unit and talk about this. I'm not here to shed doors. The only reason why we'll be shedding doors if you guys are not trying to live up to what our community needs you guys to live up to.
That's more than fair. Thank you. You know, I'm sorry. Your name again?
Tanya.
Tanya, thank you. So Tanya, you made a comment earlier about, you know, one thing I'm hoping for tonight is to drive to action wherever we can. If you have an expertise in community benefit agreements, perhaps as a follow-up, I would suggest another meeting, but as a follow-up, perhaps you could help to identify if you know, Coach K's, you know, made the comment of needs to be fair and equitable, it needs to be all the different groups. I don't want to be the one to presume that I know exactly which groups those are, so could you consider, please, you know, maybe helping to, in the construct of a community benefit agreement, begin to identify which of those groups should be involved. You can say, no, that's not your role and needs to be somebody else, and that's totally fair. But I am trying to take the conversation a little bit forward because I hear you. You want to hear from us and what should be in agreement right now today. I don't want to intentionally omit someone. So who would I say, you know, here are our thoughts. Who'd I even send that to?
You don't have to really admit anyone. Yeah. What we can do as community groups and activists, we can sit down and talk as a group of activists and work this out until we get to those points.
Okay.
So at this point, it's not about putting nobody in charge because that's going to throw everything off right off the bat.
Okay. Well, what I don't want to do that, and talking, I don't want to put you in on the hot
y'all
seat
can
either.
Talk and we can say what we're looking for. Y'all can say what y'all willing to give and what y'all not willing to give. This is not hard.
Well, let me just say this then. So I'll sit tight and let that conversation occur. I counted 9 items on the Reverend's list from the voting that occurred on the 5th. Maybe I missed one. Maybe it's 10 versus 9. What I heard, substantively, I think is all things that are fair and all things that should be discussed. And there's probably some way that we can get to some commonality on each of these areas that ultimately lives in some form of a community benefit agreement. Sure, we've got to work through it all, but you asked, you know, what, sir, you kind of asked what we would bring in a community benefit agreement. I'm saying everything I heard is perfectly fair for us to work through, and there's probably some stuff in the realm of action that we can identify in each of these 9 categories. I'm sorry, ma'am. Thanks for being patient.
Couple things. Grassroots Detroiters will be having a community meeting coming up within the next few weeks. We would love for you guys to come out and speak a little bit about the project, give some more of a wider and larger amount of the community more information about what's going on.
Okay.
And also, it's...
Well, let me give you my card when we're... Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. I remember.
Okay. No, you're okay.
Some of the things that were not mentioned, and correct me if I'm wrong, as far as a community benefits agreement would be you guys doing repairs to homes. Mr. D mentioned the filtration system and really coming in with the community to improve our community.
Parks.
Donating to our park, donating to our community center, and really coming in and being a good neighbor.
So I want to understand a little bit more about what that, you know, looks like in your mind. And so to me, that's a conversation that, you know, along with all of these things, we should sit down and go through together. If I can't make it in 2 weeks, hopefully there's another meeting coming soon. We'll just let me know about the dates, and we'll I commit to coming to a meeting. I just don't know which one yet, but we'll work out those details. So, yeah.
One last little comment. So it seems that there are a few problems with this facility right now. As we know, it's shut down, and you're under two consent orders, different ones, one for odor violations, one for material things. There's the Joe Louis Greenway coming through that will be sort of a little antithetical to what you guys are doing, and Eagle's kind of starting to change their minds and starting to understand that, you know, community engagement is also what they're trying to represent the people a little bit more than just the companies that they used to. Are there any high-level talks at Republic of maybe changing what this facility is and maybe not using it for hazardous waste?
Well, a comment I made earlier, as much non-hazardous processing occurs there as, right. as hazardous.
Right, right. So maybe getting rid of the hazardous waste?
You know, what I will tell you right now that we're hearing from industrial customers is how quickly, you know, could there be, you know, some form of return to some semblance of operations. I think that a lot of industrial customers have been in a bind since the pause in operations. And so we're getting a lot of feedback on that end of, hey, this is a bit of a bind for us. This is a bit of a jam for us. So I mean, to be candid, I don't know that what you're describing is necessarily part of an internal discussion. I'd say what is occurring is more a conversation also within our organization. We're way past the recognition of this facility has to be better in the community. And we're way past a conversation of might there have been off-site odor impacts or dust impacts at this facility. That, you know, we're way past that point. It's operationally has to be better and will be better. Community has to be better and will be better. I'd submit to you those are the conversations that are occurring.
Just real quick, just what you said kind of worries me a little bit. So you're saying your customers are in a bind, so they're stockpiling everything, and then when the operations come back on, you'll actually do more processing?
No, that's not what I said at all, sir. I said they're in a bind. Thanks for it. It was a good try, but No. What, you know, the bind,
I mean, where,
that they're
where,
in
where
is
are they getting processed right
they
now?
They have to find alternate locations for processing, and sometimes those are, you know, very long distances and, you know, costly journeys away.
What's wrong with Lansing? Lansing?
I'm not familiar with the facility you're referring to.
Yeah, why can't they put a facility in Lansing?
I don't know who they might be.
I mean, Republic, why you can't put a facility in Lansing? Why does this one, is this such a press to open it up?
I would tell you that this facility has served the industrial community in Metro Detroit for a long period of time. And a lot of those employers in the community are interested in knowing when the facility will be at a point where Eagle and operationally us are in a position to begin servicing them again. That's the immediate focus, ma'am.
And willing to take on the liability of what that entails.
Well, there's
ground pollution possibly. There might be soil remediation. Maybe there's like effects of the neighborhood that haven't really been talked about.
I guess what I'd say is there's an enforcement notice that we already have from Eagle.
An enforcement notice that
we already have with Eagle. That means a consent order's coming. That means a penalty's coming. That consent order, along with the stuff that we're already doing, the work plan, if you will, that Eagle approved back in June. That means there's going to be even more improvements at the site. And so I guess what I'd submit is operationally, you're already seeing the beginning of the activity that will make this facility best in class.
Yeah. So I appreciate that the Republic fleet might be going electric, but there's a lot of trucks that come into your facility that are not owned by you. What about all those trucks?
Just to give you the name of those companies.
I think
we can probably find out the names of all of them.
Says there's another door.
It would be really cool if one day all of those heavy-duty vehicles could get there. I guess what I tell you, so I made a comment earlier. I sort of talked about Republic and sustainability, and I tried to be as quick as we can because I know that, you know, that's not why we're here, right? But the R&D piece on electrification, the big issue is batteries are so heavy. They're heavy in personal vehicles. They're even heavier in heavy-duty vehicles.
I've seen the Hummer battery over at GM.
And so the R&D comment is about, you know, a lot of work that a ton of people, not just us, are doing to try to figure out how to lessen the weight of those, because you've got things like weight restrictions on, you know, roadways and those kinds of things. And you made a comment, Reverend, I've heard it before, about roadways and a desire to see roadways improve. And so super heavy vehicles can have an adverse impact on roadways. And so one day, you know, perhaps as we work through all the stuff that we're doing on our fleet, you know, some of those
learnings from the R&D process and, you know, best practices and advances in technology. We'll get to a place there, but, you know, we're, as a society, that's going to be a little bit yet. Yeah. Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Good evening, everyone. I'm just Tanya Myers-Phillips of Sugar Law Center. And, of course, I wanted to definitely affirm that I'm here to support the coalition and translate pen to paper what the coalition decides is best. So. Not pre-deciding, and when we get that direction, the signatories, you know, that's not an issue. There are so many forms of different ways that you can structure these agreements. So I'm encouraged to hear you say that the meat and potatoes part, you don't really see any objection to the priorities the communities have listed.
Substantively, yeah, and I'm sure that there'll be things that everybody will want to work through, but... you know, part of the reason I looked at you and thought, oh, how great it is that you're here and you've got this expertise. Me, personally, I don't know that I've seen a community benefit agreement with more than two parties. And so I'm sure there's a precedent, but if I could give you my card, maybe you could just share me an example of one just so I could put eyes on it as a starter. I've just not seen something like that before. So.
Yeah. Okay. I don't want to get ahead of the community, but there are
quick question. We just don't want these lines to get blurred. As far as coalitions claiming this community. Because, see, this community has organizations that are up and flourish. So before a collision that's 3 miles or 4 miles away will not be able to make a decision on what we choose. That's why I said no disrespect. We gonna talk. I'm not even mad. But I just don't want that to be confused as a blurred line that a collision of a community that's not from this neighborhood to make a decision of a choice over the residents of the community. Well, that's all I was saying.
Yeah, no, thank you. And it's kind of another. I'm sorry, Coach.
I just want to say this. When it comes to the coalition, and I'm not a part of the coalition, but there's groups on this side of 94 that is a part of the Hamtramck. It's called the Hamtramck Detroit or Detroit Hamtramck Coalition. So there are some groups on the downtown on this side of El Support that is part of that same coalition.
And the D's were at the meeting when we talked about these priorities, too, just for reference. Because I feel like you're talking about 4820711, and I got total respect. Right? Are you? Is that what you're referring to, miss?
No, she was making a comment, not for me, her comment.
No,
but what community group are you talking about?
Well, I'm from this community, and I'm part of I have a community club. They have a community club, and we are combined. What I'm saying, that's 482.
I'm just saying, they were at the meeting last week when we talked about it.
Yes, so. Yes. So I understand what you're saying, and we can debrief and let him finish about what we're talking about. But I'm speaking about far as this community. Yes. This is where my roots are. These are my roots.
So I'm not going to pretend to have the benefit of the knowledge of all the different groups and where they're located. And so that is an ask I have of this group here tonight is to just help me understand that as we progress and help me to figure out what's equitable.
And maybe just to clarify things, I think the coalition is not here to represent us. It's here to facilitate the conversation that we have with U.S. Ecology.
That's all she's saying.
Most impactful.
I just don't want them to think that they can make the decision.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
No one's making decisions.
I was just wondering, so it's 7:30. Are you still planning to do your presentation?
Okay. I think we brought some hard copies. I don't know, Kate, but we have enough for everybody in the room, but we can do whatever the group would like. If there's value in continuing this, then...
Are you guys presenting in relation to the construction at the site and like the plan improvements?
It is a little bit of an update on the repairs that are occurring. It's a little bit of an update on the air monitoring. That was a topic the last time this group got together. A little bit of an update on groundwater sampling. And then what am I missing, Scott?
Just some of the go forward
plans.
Yeah.
So, you know, at the Detroit North meeting, we spent,
you know, the bulk of the time kind of going through the presentation. It's, I think it's evident with this group that these kinds of conversations needed to occur. And so it could be that it's the inverse. We just spent a few minutes kind of giving you an update, and you can take the handouts with you, and you know how to reach me after the fact, because I realize everybody's got lives and families and things, and so I get that. I guess it's whatever you prefer.
Didn't want to stay, we'd love to see it.
Okay.
If folks need to go, they can get a handout maybe and get in touch with you later.
What if we do, unless there's another comment or question, what if we just do a 3-minute, everybody stretches their legs, we go in there, we make sure the projector's working, and for those that want to hang around, great. And for those that don't, great as well. Anybody that's leaving, let me know, I'll give you my card.
From Republic Services, we thank MD Eagle, we thank our electeds for being here, thank everyone for coming, and hopefully we'll be able to work together well.
And, but we don't thank, we don't thank